Hello, listeners, and welcome to this second part in a two-part series on voluntary administration, a guide for creditors. With me, I again have our managing director, Mr. Stipe Valletta. Stipe, welcome.
Hi, Hugh. How are you going?
I'm going very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, look, better now that we're here talking about voluntary administration.
Absolutely. It is truly the highlight of my day. Well, I guess by a quick recap, on the last occasion we got up to the second meeting of creditors in a voluntary administration process, and we outlined generally the three options available to creditors when voting at that meeting, those options being to place the company into liquidation, to return the company as a solvent company, or to enter the company into a deed of company arrangement. And I thought that we would now move into, I suppose, how voting would occur at that meeting of creditors to help our listeners with that aspect of the process.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. Look, voting at a creditors meeting is actually pretty straightforward. A lot of creditors, particularly those that are unrepresented or may not have a historic sophistication within their organisation about how to deal with voluntary administration, can find the process a bit confusing, though. And what I would say is if you've never done it before and administration is particularly valuable to you, to reach out to a lawyer and insolvency practitioner who's not already acting on a particular administration, get some advice. It's not uncommon for people to actually do appearances at creditors' meetings at a paid service, I guess.
So you can instruct a lawyer to appear on your behalf, essentially.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, before you go to the creditors' meeting, all creditors would be required to lodge to the administrator in accordance with a particular administrative process, a form called a proof of debt. That proof of debt is effectively a summary of all the debts or claims that that creditor has against a company in liquidation. And so that claim will be for an amount.
Yes.
And generally what ends up happening is at a meeting of creditors, voting can be done either in person or by proxy. So a proxy is just a second form that you'd fill out, particularly if you are sending a representative such as a lawyer or another insolvency practitioner to act on your behalf to vote in a particular way. So that is a specific or special proxy, and the alternative being a general proxy. So just saying, hey, Hugh, you're my lawyer, show up to the meeting, act generally in my interests and make various decisions at the voting. As we discuss, there are various things to vote on. And each time there's a vote called, there'd be a chairman. Commonly, the chairman of the meeting is the administrator themselves or one of their representatives. And they would effectively just pose a question or a resolution to creditors about, say, for example, those three options you recapped at the beginning.
Yes.
And creditors would vote. Commonly, that's just done in an informal sense. If there's a consensus vote, there's no real need to do a poll.
Yes.
Because everyone agrees. But what might happen is there might be a dissenting creditor or alternatively some conjecture about the outcome of a vote. In those circumstances, there would be a more formal voting procedure called a poll. And in engaging in a poll, the chairman of the meeting, as I said, more commonly the administrator, would effectively consider the number of creditors who are voting in particular order and in favour or against a particular resolution, and then also the value of a particular creditor or creditor pool.
So that would be how much their proof of debt says they're owed.
Exactly. And what they would do is they would add up the number of people voting and the number, so the number of individual votes in for or against a particular resolution, and the value of votes for or against a particular resolution. And the aim of the process is to get both numbers and value in favour of a resolution. And if creditors can't come to, I guess, a super majority, then it's up to the chairman to exercise their casting vote one way or the other, either for or against a particular resolution. And I guess it's important to note that because the chairman is commonly an administrator, or their representatives, and they're the ones that have prepared the Section 439A report and made the recommendation, it's not uncommon for administrators, if they're required to cast a casting vote, to vote in accordance with the recommendation they've made.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So often this can be I guess, approached with a level of concern by some creditors, particularly those that don't agree with the recommendations of the administrator. But what I would say is, if you're truly concerned about a recommendation made by an administrator prior to a meeting in their 439A report, you should really get legal advice and engage with that administrator or their representatives to figure out exactly why they've made that recommendation, and try to approach the meeting as well prepared as you possibly can.
Yes, and would that involve, do you think, talking to other creditors of the company, for example, so that you can vote in blocks?
Yeah, look, so I guess what you're talking about is creditor activism.
Yes.
Creditor activism is definitely something which has become far more common in recent years. As the economic landscape has changed and the makeup of creditors at meetings has changed, you tend to find that there are a lot more employee creditors. There's the Fair Work Ombudsman sometimes appears. There are often groups of trade creditors which might fall into the same category of trade creditor or suppliers or subcontractors and so on.
Yes.
So the pattern of creditors talking to each other and voting in blocks is becoming more common.
Okay.
And we would recommend that if you do feel quite strongly about a particular direction in a voluntary administration, that you do consult with other creditors.
Yes. No, absolutely. Okay. Well, I guess moving on to the effect of the three scenarios, the first one being liquidation. What does that generally mean if at the meeting of the creditors they vote for the company to go into liquidation?
Look, if the creditors resolve that the company should go into liquidation, the voluntary administrator becomes the liquidator.
Okay.
Unless the creditors vote at the second meeting to appoint a different liquidator of their choice. And the liquidator then proceeds as what's described as a creditor's voluntary liquidation, with any payments of dividends to creditors made in the order set out under the Corporations Act. And what that effectively means is liquidation is a way of closing off the affairs of a company.
Okay.
And of that liquidator independently going in and investigating any antecedent transactions, so yes, such as voidable transactions, unfair preferences, unreasonable director-related transactions, investigating the directors and their associated parties for insolvent trading and other compensatory and potential criminal breaches of the Corporations Act, as well as making assessments of whether they've complied with their director's duties.
Yes.
And then reporting to creditors. Liquidation will also see liquidators call in further assets and take legal action, depending on the commerciality and legal veracity of any such claims. And it may even see the directors being personally prosecuted by ASIC if their acts are particularly egregious or at least civilly pursued by liquidators for the benefit of the creditor pool.
Yes, and as you touched on in the first episode of this podcast, it's the administrator's duties to investigate on a preliminary basis those potential claims under the Corporations Act in a liquidation scenario. Would you recommend a creditor should get across that area of law potentially with their legal advisor before voting on any of these issues or voting to place a company into liquidation?
Look, I absolutely do agree, Hugh. The purposes of voluntary administration, amongst other things, are primarily to preserve business value. Flowing on from this general aim of voluntary administration is the general goal of preserving jobs, improving the recycling of assets and value within, I guess, industry.
Yes.
And ultimately, it's the goal of any administration to avoid liquidation. So yes, creditors faced with a liquidation scenario should certainly get legal and financial advice before brashly just deciding to put a company into liquidation for punitive effects.
Yes.
Certainly there are cases when directors and related parties and third parties more than deserve and in fact require investigation and prosecution. But ultimately, the goal of administration is the preservation of value.
Yes.
And creditors voting at second meeting should really consider this.
Which I suppose brings us to the second option available to creditors, which is to keep the company, or to make the company trade solvently and get it out of administration without a deed of company arrangement. I suppose that speaks for itself, really.
Yep.
And the third option, which is a deed of company arrangement, we touched on it briefly in the last episode, but if you could please explain to the listeners, I suppose, what a deed of company arrangement normally entails and what its effect is on the administration.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. So, look, a deed of company arrangement, as I said in part one, is just a deed between the company and its creditors, and it's brought into legal effect by virtue of a resolution by creditors at the second meeting. The deed can really say anything, subject to some minor legal restrictions under the case law and obviously the regulations and legislation, but generally a deed is very flexible.
Yes.
If creditors vote for a proposal that the company enter into a deed of company arrangement, the company must sign the deed within 15 days of that meeting, unless the court allows for a longer time. If this doesn't happen, the company will automatically go into liquidation, with the voluntary administrator becoming liquidator. So one of the most important things about the deed of company arrangement process is actually making sure that the terms of a deed proposal are substantially complete and agreed upon between all the parties which need to sign that deed, who might be contributing funds or making accommodations to the company or providing it with ongoing credit or supply to allow it to trade in the context of a deed.
Yes.
So that the process of finalizing the terms and signing that deed doesn't fall over.
Yes.
The contents of the deed are quite prescriptive, but at the same time, pretty flexible. So you really just need the name of the deed administrator, the property that will be used to pay creditors, the debts covered by the deed, and extent to which those debts are released, the order in which the available funds will be paid. So obviously in accordance with the legislation and subject to any minor changes, the nature and duration of any suspension of any other rights against the company, and then obviously any conditions precedent, conditions subsequent to the deed's operation, and circumstances around the deed's termination. So nothing you wouldn't otherwise put in any commercial deed of the company. It's just elevated to a special place by virtue of the Corporations Act.
Yes, and as you said, the creditors at this second meeting of creditors have the option to extend the administration to allow for further negotiations around that docker. Is that correct?
They do, and I would say that if there is some concern around a docker proposal or even the terms of a very complex deed, that creditors obtain legal and financial advice to consider adjourning the second meeting rather than agreeing to a docker proposal that they're not quite yet ready to flesh out. Particularly if they're a party to the deed and they have an obligation under the deed. Many creditors won't have obligations under the deed because under statute, a deed of company arrangement binds all unsecured creditors, whether they attend the meeting, whether they vote, or whether they sign.
Okay.
It also binds owners of property, those who lease property to the companies, and secured creditors if they voted in favour of the deed. So in certain circumstances, the court can also order certain people to be bound by a deed even if they didn't vote for it and they're subject to certain exemptions.
Yes.
So what I would be saying is if you're concerned about a deed proposal or the potential terms of a future deed, particularly if you're a party which might be physically signing and have an obligation under the deed, or a party which might have special protections from release under a deed, that you get legal advice before the second meeting and you vote accordingly.
Yes.
And as you foreshadowed, if you have concerns, vote for an adjournment.
Absolutely.
Don't waste the opportunity.
Well, Sipe, on that, I think we might wrap up our second episode. Thank you so much, Sipe, for your sage wisdom and counsel. If you or any of our listeners have any questions in relation to this episode or our first episode, we ask that you please visit our website, being www.chamberlains.com.au, or visit any of our social medias, being Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or even LinkedIn. See you next time for the Chamberlains Law Firm Lawcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. As with all Chamberlains Law Firm podcasts, the information that you have heard in this podcast is not legal advice and cannot be considered legal advice. If you have any questions or queries, please do not hesitate to contact our office on 02 6188 3600 or otherwise look us up on our website, which is www.chamberlains.com.au.